Israel. Rabbi, what an interesting thing to meet on the occasion of a new state in your part of the world. We now have a country called Palestine. It says so in the New York Times.
Well, it says in the Times, and I guess it's true. Well, actually, it's always nice seeing Arabs in Algiers talking about the state in which I live, because tomorrow I'll be there, and the Arabs will still be in Algiers. In any case, it's not a relevant thing. The only tragedy is that, you know, I've been on 5 radio shows since Sunday night, and on each show, telephone, on each show, the hosts have been just fulsome in their praise of this historic trend and this moment in which Arafat has implicitly recognized Israel. Well, I think that Israel is in for a great deal of pressure, from a world which wants to pressure it, and which will seize upon every nonsensical step made by the PLO, every joke of a step. And I think that Jews have to be very, very careful not to buckle in under this pressure, because the pressure has about as much meaning as Arafat's step. And, of course, I'm much more worried about the Jewish anti-Semites than I am about the classical kinds. The Jewish anti-Semites who were so riddled with guilt about themselves and everything else, well, of course, they will now, now that the PLO has made this gesture, so we, of course, have to die. In any case, let's not get excited. Let's just, yawn a bit and take a good nap, get up, fresh in the morning, and know that nothing has happened.
By the way, there's too little time left to let Lenny Brenner start, but just enough time left to let the listeners know that you have not dissolved your party.
Oh, absolutely. No, of course not. The Koch movement is now known as Koch, which means strength. A little change here and there, and we keep right on going.
Obeying the law and no longer banned because you're a racist party.
Right. We will follow the exact quotes from the Torah, the Talmud, and we're in.
We'll be right back to this intersection. I'm Barry Farber. I'm a rabbi by Eric Kahana. The reason that we don't go saying, wow, these Israelis sure speak good English, is true. Many of them do. I don't want to take any compliment away from them, but Rabbi Kahana did not learn his English in Jerusalem or in Haifa or Tel Aviv or Eilat or in the Galilee. He learned it in Brooklyn. Used to sit in Ebbets Field, watch Dixie Walker, did all the things American boys did, except he came to some awarenesses not every American Jewish boy did. We'll get to that, some of them, momentarily. Rabbi Kahana, the head of the Koach party, no longer the Koch party. That was banned for being a racist party by the Israeli Supreme Court after the Knesset passed a law saying that parties like the Koch party could not run in Israeli elections. So rather than just simply tumble into water like an Alka-Seltzer tablet and dissolve, they decided to come back as the Koch party, meaning strength. And as far as their racist character, they are only going to quote scripture. There's a law, another law in Israel that says no party that quotes scripture shall be prevented from quoting scripture, something like that. Lenny Brenner, what's your quarrel with Meir Kahana?
Well, I think he's about the only one in the world who's yawning and taking a nap over the declaration of a Palestinian state. The State Department is not yawning, and the State Department is not taking a nap, and I doubt if there's a foreign ministry anywhere in the world that is. What the Declaration of Independence represents is the fact that world public opinion has dramatically shifted on the question of Palestine and Zionism in the last year. That now, in the eyes of the press of the world and the television of the world, that their attitude is okay. Now we get the picture. It's the Palestinians that are the good guys, and the Zionists were the bad guys. Now you, Mr. Arafat, have to tell us what you, the good guys, want. And hence he made his declaration for what amounts to a West Bank state, even though he's still wavering on whether or not he's recognizing Israel.
I don't think Meir Kahane is going to disagree with what you said so far.
No, I'm just saying that the fact that that the so-called world, as you call it, I don't know what world you mean, which is relevant to Israel. Singapore, Hong Kong.
All right, I'll tell you. In the United States right now, with the Democratic Convention, the newspapers did a poll before the convention of the delegates as they came in, and one poll said 70% of the delegates at the Democratic Convention, which is run by Dukakis and a pro-Zionist cabal, nevertheless, 70% of them are in favor of a Palestinian state. And then after a lot of arm-twisting by Dukakis, another poll said 50% was still in favor of a West Bank state.
So what?
Well, the United States happens to pay the bills. Who pays the piper calls the tune.
You know something? In 1947, the U.S. voted for a resolution which would have created a Jewish state and an Arab state. So what has changed? Over the years, many has been the time that America has pressured Israel and been angry at Israel, and all kinds of dire warnings have been said that America will do this and America will do that. I recall when Schultz visited Israel. How many times? Twice, three times last year. All the incredible warnings that if Shamir will be inflexible and won't give in, my God, what's going to happen? Well, what happened was that three times Mr. Schultz came to Israel and three times he went back to Mrs. Schultz.
This isn't Schultz. I'm saying that when I mean that the world, I don't mean the crooked politicians in Washington. I mean the public opinion. You go out to the American people, the ones that pay any attention at all to politics,
mm-hmm.
and overwhelmingly now they are shifting away from Israel. Every poll shows that the number of people who are in favor of cutting arms or aid to Israel increases. Every poll shows that.
I'm also for that.
You're for cutting American arms to Israel.
No, I said I am for cutting American economic aid to Israel.
Oh, but not the arms.
Of course not, because wait a second. That's a quid pro kind of a thing. If the U.S. government and American people think that it is not worth giving Israel arms, then they have an absolute right and obligation not to, and then they won't get the Haifa naval base, and then they won't get the Negev as a storage area for U.S. weapons, and all the other things that a stable ally gives, and there are no stable allies in that region except Israel. America doesn't back Israel because it is good. It never has backed it because it is good. So I would suggest that you get out of your shtetl and become free. Become a proud Jew rather than I'm what you sound like.
I didn't know I lived in a shtetl. I mean,
you do.
All over the United States.
Stone walls do not a shtetl make.
Hardly make. America hardly qualifies as a shtetl. I mean, that's absurd. But again, what I'm emphasizing is this, that the average American now looks at the TV and they see the same thing every day. The Palestinians throwing rocks and the Zionists killing the Palestinians with American guns.
You're right, because if I were the prime minister, the cameras wouldn't have been allowed in there, and no one would have seen anything. In fact, I'll go further. If I'd have been the prime minister, not one Arab would have been killed, because the Arabs wouldn't have been there either.
One quick subtitle to our Presbyterian friends: a shtetl is a little fiddler on the roof town in eastern Poland, western Russia, the kind where Barbara Streisand as a girl tried to go to the yeshiva. That's a shtetl.
A second footnote: a shtetl is also a state of mind.
Well, if we're going to talk shtetls, I mean, you're the one that lives in this little narrow Jewish world.
Hold
not
it right
I.
back, right back to this intersection. Farber Meir Kahana, a political figure in Israel. They didn't repress him. They didn't shoot at his kneecaps. They did him a tremendous favor by banning him. He is stronger than ever in Israel. His new party is off and running now, and he was denied seeing his rank swell from one seat to, who knows, maybe a dozen, which is what the polls showed they would do. He was literally shot off the stage, but there's a tomorrow. How soon could the next election be, Rabbi Kahana?
Who knows? You know, over there, there is no thing. There is nothing like here. Here, it's 4 years, and that's it. Over there, any, you know, crisis can lead to, motion of no confidence, and it could fall... It can fall within a month, 2 months, 3 months. I don't think that will happen, but certainly I think that you would be a foolhardy person betting that this government will last out the 4 years. I think that the objective factors, war pressure, intifada, everything else, plus a government which is made up of the partnership is, and it isn't a very, very happy one. It's a forced one. So I think that you can certainly bet that it will certainly not survive even half of its term.
Lenny Brenner is a writer, and he knows a lot about the Middle East and Israel, and he feels deeply about it, just as Meir Kahana does, but from a different direction.
Yeah, you know, I'm inclined to agree that the government will last for quite a while. I mean, it has with it, and it meaning the Likud coalition and the new religious bloc, they have a majority vote, and they have enough in common to hold them together. Shamir has a consistent line. I have a quote from him where he says, "We can expect scores of thousands of years of terrorism, but not to worry, we're going to win all the time." And he has nothing to offer the Palestinians, of course. He's not for a West Bank state or anything. He didn't even vote for the Camp David Accord, which gave him some kind of flim-flam autonomy. So he's going to face not scores of thousands of years, but he's going to face violence on the part of the Palestinians, and not only on the West Bank, but within Israel itself, the Arabs within Israel, as they demand their equal rights with the Jewish citizens there. And, of course, there is going to be pressure from abroad, and it is not going to come from George Bush. I mean, George Bush has two main concerns with regards to the Middle East. One is he sees the Israelis as his anti-communist bastion, and that's very important to him. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is he sees the Arabs as running the oil. But neither one of those is going to put any great pressure on Bush to move against Shamir. But public opinion in the United States is exasperated because they don't, you know, they're when they hear this kind of thing about that Shamir is going to face scores of thousands of years of terrorism, the first question Americans ask is, Yitzhak, who's going to pay for scores of thousands of years of you shooting at the Palestinians? And Americans are not the politically most sophisticated people in the world, but they're not about to pay for an endless war to the end of time.
Well, you know, I think that if you lived in the real world, you would know that the average person in this country gets upset and exercised about the NFL and not about Israel.
Rabbi, hold it. Let that be just a foretaste of the answer. We'll get right back for a longer one momentarily. I'm Barry Farber. Barry Farber, my partners for the broadcast, Rabbi Meir Kahana of the Kach Party, now the Koach Party. He didn't just decide to shift one little Hebrew letter just for design or effect or anything. The Kach Party was banned by the Israeli parliament and then by help held by the Israeli Supreme Court for being a racist party. It came back as the Koach Party, whole new party, and it is now assiduously obeying the law, campaigning only by use of scripture. Lenny Brenner has written three books on Israel and the Middle East: The Iron Wall, Zionist Revisionism from Jabotinsky to Shamir, Jews in America Today, and Zionism in the Age of the Dictators. Rabbi Kahana, how do you keep your cool when Lenny Brenner says things that I would think as a talk show producer would send you into orbit, such as the American people saying to Mr. Shamir, how long do you think we're going to pay for your shooting Palestinians?
Because he's not important, with all due respect. He's not relevant. He's a phenomenon, because there are no Arab Lenny Brenners. He's a phenomenon. There is something about the exile of 2,000 years which produced Lenny Brenners. And again, believe me, this is not personal. I've met many, many such Jews who have an obsession, a need to dig the grave of their own people. And of course, he'll say it isn't true, but it is true. So I don't get angry, because the only relevant thing about Israel is the people of Israel and the God of Israel, and if those two stick together, we have no fears. And on this point, Shamir was right. We may have to face 1,000 years of Arab terror. So what? It's a sad thing, because all of us want peace. But I'd rather have a strong Jewish state than a weak, rather than a strong Auschwitz. And as I've said 1,000 times, I'd rather have a Jewish state that's hated by the whole world and by Lenny Brenner than an Auschwitz that is loved by the world.
Yeah, I'm not in exile. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, and I'm talking from Manhattan, which is right across the river. And I was born in this here briar patch. I'm not in exile. I'm in my own country. I like it here. Okay, I like other countries as well, but I'm not in exile. I mean, you know, I really don't care that my great ancestors, 66 generations back, were from Palestine. I couldn't care less. Doesn't mean a thing to me. I was born here. I speak English. This is my country, and I like it here. As rotten as the government is, I like it here, okay? Secondly, you said before, well, there's the real world. The average American is concerned with the National Football League, not with the Palestinians. Half the American people don't know what country or countries that Arabs and Jews are fighting about. That's a fact, okay? And in fact, in my new book, I dwell on the ignorance of a great number of Americans. They don't count, because they are neither pro-Palestinian nor pro-Israeli. They are neither hot nor cold, and therefore I spoolie out, as one of the Bible says, all right? The people that count are the people that do pay attention to politics. That is the real world. That is public opinion. I mean, we're both on a talk show now at 11 o'clock, at 11:30 at night, talking, because we're trying to convince what we consider the real world. If we don't take it seriously, if we don't take those people out there seriously, then what are we here for? What are any of us here for? So there's a real world. Now, the fact of the matter is that 10 Democratic state conventions in this last election voted for a Palestinian state. 5 years ago, none of them did that. No one proposed it. None of them voted for it. 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago. Now they're doing it, all right? Now, you know, you are wise, you're exceedingly wise, but can you read the signs of the times? I mean, those are the signs of the times. And the Democratic Party, which in large measure relies on Jewish campaign contributions, 10 state conventions vote for Palestinian state, something is happening, and that most definitely is part of the real world.
No, because what you're really saying is, look, unless Israel decides to get up and take its own life, it may be killed. What you're saying is, this country is getting angrier and angrier, and it will pressure Israel more and more, and therefore Israel should do what you say it does, or it should do, meaning it should give up territory, it should give up this, it should give up of that. But I know that that is suicide. So therefore, I say, since I have no intention of taking my life, it is not relevant what you think or what anyone else thinks. And that is the actual point. That is the real world for a Jewish state that is hounded by enemies, both non-Jews and worse Jews.
Yeah, except, you know, when you were talking before about exile, the fact is there are about 200,000 Israelis in the United States and only about 30, 40,000 American Jews in Israel. So
yes.
If there's any exiling, it's all those Israelis who say they are tired of fighting endless wars and they'd rather sit out the next one in Los Angeles or in New York.
You're right. So what is that true?
So in other words, you can't assume, I'm sure, Mark Haney, you're going to be on the barricades. You're going to be the last one out the television. The airport, as it were, all right? But the fact of the matter is a lot of others are sick and tired of fighting this endless war. And when Shamir says, hey, not to worry, we're going to have to fight these guys for 20,000 more years, not to worry about it, you know, we're going to win all the wars for the next 20,000 years, then the average Israeli says, it's time to see my cousin Irving time to have a long talk.
You know, I mean, you talk about the average Israeli, the average American, as if you've gone around and really polled the average one. Now, I don't know how many times you've been in Israel and how long you've been in Israel and whether you've been there recently. I can say one thing for you, that because of the Intifada, my share of the army vote, according to the polls, went up from 10% to close to 40%. You're right. As a logical thinker, and you're a logical thinker in an intellectual manner, your intellectual thinking is, well, it makes sense. My God, of course it should follow that they're getting tired and tired. But the fact of the matter is that there are always people that desert the ship. But the overwhelming majority, there is a shift in Israel today to the right. With the Intifada, indeed, the Intifada shifted it to the right. So you're sitting here, and I really, really, I can thank you for your, you know, feelings for us and, you know, commiseration for us and warning us that unless we change our policy, Nebuch, things are going to be bad for us. But I suggest that you visit Israel. In fact, I'll be happy to take you around. Jews of Israel and God.
Well, you know, everybody thinks there's a link between them and God. You know, I mean, Arafat proclaimed his state in the name of God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Muslims proclaim, they talk in the name of God. I was up in Lebanon, I met phalangist fanatics. Everybody is talking in the name of God. You didn't poll God on this, did you? I mean,
Sure?
He told you. All right.
Okay. Listen, look, you know, I mean, I don't know what that proves. Everyone talks about justice. The Russians talk about justice, and Cuba talks about justice, and the Americans talk about justice. But there is an objective justice. It's only, people like, what's her name? Ruth, the one, the sociologist, the famous one. Come on. In any case.
Margaret Mead.
She would go to some South Pacific island and see that people eat their mothers-in-law. And so she would come and say, obviously there is nothing wrong with one's eating, because over here some tribe eats it. There is objective truth. There really is. And the fact that Stalin would cynically use democracy doesn't mean that he had democracy. I believe firmly that the Jewish people is God's chosen people. The fact that Khomeini believes that the Muslims are, or the Pope believes that Christians are, or that you believe that nobody is, is not relevant. There is an objective truth, and if there isn't, then how in the world could we have hanged the Nazis in Nuremberg?
Yeah, well, you see, I don't claim to speak in the name of objective truth, all right? I mean, I see certain things, I mean, that I believe to be true, but I don't claim, you know, God is on my side. I didn't ask the gentleman. I mean, and I don't care. I happen to be an atheist. If you want to believe in religion, pray to the rain god. I don't care. That's fine. Pray to a Jewish rain god. That's fine, too. I don't care.
I mean, so I raise the issue.
And the fact of the matter is, what you have in between the water and the water, between the Mediterranean and the Jordan River, are two nationalities. Now, either they live in absolute equality, or there will be strife between them. Because in the modern age, the Arabs are not going to tolerate second-class citizenship. Nowhere on this planet is any nationality going to tolerate in the 20th century. Second-class citizenship.
Mr. Brenner, that is not the problem. The Arabs don't want an Israel, period. Now, I don't know why you, sitting in 1988, can't realize that Arafat now is talking about a resolution which was passed in 1947. That is what he's really talking about. A UN partition plan which would have given them much more than they claim they now want. And they said, no, that's the issue. What are you talking about? The Palestinians, as you call them, and because I'm polite, I'll also call them that.
What do you call them?
Arabs.
Arabs, fine, great. All right, the Arabs.
Okay. Now, the Arabs massacred Jews in the 1920s. Was that because they wanted equal rights? It was because they said it's our country, the Jews have no rights to their state, period. That's the issue. If you think that there is one Arab that doesn't sincerely believe that Jaffa in Israel is as much Arab as Hebron is, well, then you don't know Arabs anymore than you know Jews.
I'll tell you exactly what Arabs have told me, okay? Sabri Girius, who is the inventor or one of the architects of the two-state theory, I asked him once, I said, how can you really be in favor of the recognition of the state of Israel? I was up in Beirut, and I asked him this.
No, he isn't.
Okay, and he put it to me this way, and this is a quote, and I remember it word for word, because you don't forget something like this. Yeah. Neither in our hearts nor in our minds can we ever reconcile ourselves either to Zionism or to the state of Israel, because to do so would imply that the country where we were the born majority belongs or belonged or belong will belong in the future to somebody else. And nobody can ever say that of their own country where they are the born majority. However, we know that Israel is not going to vanish overnight. You know, and therefore we don't want to appear like fanatics. So we understand that the reunification of our country will be a very lengthy, complex process. Okay, and that's what he said. What I interpret that is, he also said, of course, we know there's no possibility of driving the Jews out. That talk stopped a long time ago. I mean, that's out of the question now. Number one, they're there. There are 3 million of them. There are too many of them to be driven out. They're too militarily strong, etc. It's sort of like I'm saying this, not him. It's sort of like the hydrant pissing on the dog to think that the Arabs, they would have to be stark raving mad to think that they're going to drive out the Jews who have 200 atom bombs. What they are fighting for now is equality. Now, they see it as coming in one of two ways. Either a separate West Bank state, West Bank Gaza state, with the old city of Jerusalem as its capital, or ultimately a democratic secular Arabs and Jews over the whole country. But they're not going to tolerate anything. They're not going to leave because you want them to, and they're not going to take second-class citizenship because Shamir wants them to. I am neither a prophet nor a prophet's son, but you don't have to be either a prophet or a prophet's son to understand that that will never come to pass.
Rabbi Kahana is not silent now because he is stunned by Lenny Brenner's eloquence or the weight of his argument. He merely sees my hand. He knows it. Just like elections in Israel, there will be another chance to speak on the Barry Farber Show. I'm Barry Farber. All time for Rabbi Kahana to answer and to go off in any direction he pleases. You can do more than answer on the broadcast.
I think that when Arabs have an opportunity to sit with left-leaning Jews, it's like giving a little child
all the toys in the world. He just loves it. He plays with them. He toys with them. And he says, well, of course we can never give Israel, but certainly we accept the fact that Israel is here until we can prove that it won't be there. What in the world do you think he meant when he said we were to reunify the country, but we can't, of course, beat Israel? Of course they're planning to beat Israel in every possible way. In every possible way. There was a time when they you know, did it in a very brutal way, war, and of course they lost one war, two wars, four wars, and now they've gotten smarter with the help of Jews. With the help of Jews. I can tell you that Israel TV has got to be the greatest weapon that the PLO has. I think that when you come and you say that, I sat with him and he admitted that in his heart he can never give up Israel or give up Palestine, but nevertheless it's impractical. What happens on the day when they think it is practical? But what interests me most is the fact that, you know, you said that you're one, you don't believe in God, which is okay, fine. Why are you so interested in Jews? What is this obsession with Jews? Just because by sheer chance you were born Jewish, why can't you be a human being? What is the obsession? I see all these books about, you know, Jews and Zionism and Israel. What is troubling you?
You know, I don't have an obsession about Jews. As a matter of fact, I was first involved in the black civil rights movement here. I have 5 arrests during the civil rights movement here. Then I spent 5 years raising money for the Irish Republicans and Catholics in Northern Ireland before I ever took the slightest bit of interest in what was going on in Israel and Palestine. Okay? Now, as a matter of fact, I have written 3 books I've written 2 books on the Middle East, and I shifted, so one of them is actually called Jews in America Today,
right.
Which is really about American Jews, and then I decided that, well, I continue to write more articles and engage in talk shows like this and so on and so forth, that I am an American, this is my briar patch, and that I then sat down and wrote a book on the Democratic Party in the United States.
I don't have an obsession with Jews. I'm glad we have another whole hour for more of this kind of exchange. The Jews have messed up my self-image as a prognosticator. I felt pretty smart and smug foreseeing and putting in writing everything that's going on in Yugoslavia today. I saw it all. I thought it was going to happen a little earlier, but my prediction is on target. I said, Bush big. David Schulte, he was nice enough to remember that out loud. I said, Bush big when Dukakis was ahead by 17 points. But the American Jews derailed me. If you had asked me a year ago, Barry, will the Israeli government ban my Air Kahana's party, I'd have said, no, forget it. It's political science fiction, because if they ever did, the outcry from the Jews of America and the world against this outrage against democracy would be so overwhelming that Israel would shake, Israel would tremble more than anything that's gone on to militate against Israel's image. The one they could not withstand the beating they would get in the world press and even in synagogues across America if they were to ban Meir Kahana. And I was wrong. They did. And where was the outcry? What I expected to be a thunderclap was not even a butterfly's belch. Meir Kahana, how can you explain that?
Well, I guess I can just say that had I been a pornographic movie, you would have heard a lot of liberals and Jewish ones, of course, screaming and yelling and talking about censorship and banning.
We'll get a fuller answer momentarily. I'm Barry Farber, and you don't have to be in the Middle East to be touched with the mysteries of the Middle East. I'm not in the Middle East, just like Lenny Brenner. I'm in Manhattan. But I was touched by the mysteries of the Middle East when I was somehow selected by Meir Kahana to be the guest of honor
at his annual American dinner in the Sheraton Center Hotel this year. They need a bigger and bigger and bigger location every single year. I was the guest of honor. I could not figure out why. I do not ring doorbells and raise money for the Koch party. Anyhow, there was one thing I meant to tell my Eric Kahana's admirers in the interest of fairness. And there's so many other things to say, I didn't have time. What I wanted to tell them was this. One fringe benefit of my business is others listen and judge who wins debates. We on the front lines of talk radio and television, we know who wants to fight and who is afraid to fight. Because we get the phone call early from the party that cannot wait to get in there and mix it up. And we say, okay, Steph, I'll call you back. And then we call the other side and press secretary say, we would rather not dignify. I mean, they're still in litigation. And we would rather not respond at this time. Now, get the setup. I was talking with some people in Israel on the night of the Israeli elections. They had no idea that Meir Kahana was in New York City or was en route to my studio. They thought they were talking safely, abstractly about Kahana. And I expressed outrage that Kahana was banned from the Israeli elections. And somebody, I don't know his name, I could look it up, it's in my notes, but an anti-Kahana voice in Jerusalem said, Mr. Farber, perhaps I should, he said something smug. He said, perhaps I should educate you a little bit about the man you're sorry was banned. Meir Kahana endorsed the murder of an Arab cab driver in reprisal for something. And at that moment, as Hollywood, remember how Earl Flynn used to swing in on that vine, you know, crash through the French window just in time to chase that villain away from that lady's bedside and rescue her? Just at trapeze timing, Meir Kahana walked in at that instant and sat down. The poor guy in Jerusalem who was maligning Kahana didn't know Kahana was anywhere near my microphone in the United States. And Kahana put on his earphone just in time to hear that. And Kahana said, you liar, you miserable liberal liar, I will give you a year's salary if you can show where I ever said that. And the guy, with a whimper, just self-destructed. He just went pop and disappeared in a purple smog. Never brought it up again. So I think if this is characteristic of those who talk about Kahana, then Americans who read about Kahana should read Kahana instead of reading about Kahana, and hear Kahana instead of hearing about Kahana. And I'm glad I was able to do that at the close range that a guest of honor enjoys at affairs like that. Lenny Brenner is the author of 3 books on the Middle East, on Israel. He has a completely different view from the view of Meir Kahana. Meir Kahana is a very religious Jew. Lenny Brenner is an atheist. Meir Kahana will indeed be the last defender of Israel. If it ever gets to that, Lenny Brenner claims no interest in the subject whatsoever. He's very happy as a Jew in the United States. Lenny Brenner's latest book is The Democratic Party, The Lesser Evil, The Lesser Evil, The Democratic Party, published by Lyle Stewart. I think you were explaining...
Yeah, I had asked Mr. Brenner why he's obsessed with, you know, being with Jewishness when, he's not Jewish in any way except by an accident of birth. And he said that he's not obsessed and that, on the contrary, he had been arrested for, you know, blacks and for Irishmen and so on and so forth. But that proves my point. You can find when someone is obsessed with being Jewish in a negative way by such things as being arrested for everybody else's people except his own people. You've never done anything for the Jewish people, but you're obsessed with writing books knocking the state of Israel, Jewish groups. I think that's a fascinating... I would love to do a psychological study here. I mean, I think that really, that I think really is an important part in this debate, because as I said earlier, and I must say it again, there are no Arab Lenny Brenners.
Oh, that there is an American Jewish Lenny Brenner. We'll hear from him momentarily.
Hold it, Lenny.
I'm Barry Farber. Sir Jerry Siegel is the only one here who can enjoy this because it's not television. But I'm looking down to the faces of Lenny Brenner and my Eric Kahana. What a test this would be. Which one is the Talmudic scholar? Which one is the stand-up Jewish zealot? Which one is the God-fearer? Which one identifies totally with the destiny of the Jewish people, and which one couldn't care less? You couldn't tell from their faces. Look at the beards. Look at the look of Talmud that just radiates. I can just feel Talmud beaming out of all four eyes facing me right now, co-equal intensity. But it's not that way. Rashi and Hillel, right? But my Eric Kahana is the one we would point to after we let you get your votes in, and Lenny Brenner is the one who is the atheist, couldn't care less about going to Israel, fighting for Israel, or even writing nice things about Israel in his three books about Israel and the Middle East. Lenny Brenner.
Yeah. The rabbi said that he insists still that I'm obsessed with Jews because I got arrested for blacks, and that shows it's a kind of special obsession, because after all, I've never been on a picket line for Jews. Okay,
anything Jewish?
Wait. Okay, now I don't have to apologize one teeny tiny little bit for being arrested to get equal rights for blacks in the United States of America, where they've been for 350 years and are fully entitled to equal rights. I don't apologize to that. And I did it. If you want to say I was obsessed as a Jew or not obsessed as a Jew, you can say anything you like. I don't have to apologize for that. I'm rather proud of that, as a matter of fact. Okay? Secondly, I got involved with equal rights for Catholics in Northern Ireland. I don't make the teeniest, tiniest little apology for that. Now, I don't like the Catholic Church, to be plain truthful about it, all right? But I was fighting for human equality. Okay? In the case of what you call Israel, what I would call Palestine, I'm not for the Arabs over the Jews. I'm not for the Jews over the Arabs. I oppose either notion of supremacy for either people. There are two people between the two waters, between the Jordan and the Mediterranean. I am for the absolute equality of Arab and Jew, neither the Arab over the Jew nor the Jew over the Arab. Because if there is the teeniest, tiniest little differentiation between them, they will be fighting over that differentiation for the 20,000 years that Shamir is talking about. And I am for peace, and in the modern world, the only way the two nationalities can have peace is under a system of absolute equality.
Well, that sounds good. The only problem is that, obviously, I didn't say that. I didn't say that you should feel sorry about marching for blacks. What you should feel sorry about is that you never once marched for Jews also. Why didn't you march for oppressed Jews? Let's forget the Soviet Union, okay? Let's forget that. The oppressed Jews of Brownsville, Brooklyn. The oppressed Jews of the South Bronx. And if you think that they're, I know, after you're an American, okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that the oppressed poor and elderly Jews who were trapped in the inner cities when the wealthier Jews fled to Great Neck or Greater Neck, if you think that those people didn't deserve to be helped, then there's something wrong. The next point that I want to make is, if you're so interested about the Middle East and equality, when was the last time you ever made a comment about Syrian Jews?
In Syria. I was in Syria in 1981.
Yes.
I met the rabbi, the chief rabbi of Damascus.
I mean, so did Mike Wallace, but I mean,
wait. Now I got you. I mean, in other words, you said, when was the last time that I said anything about Syria? I was there, all right? I interviewed these
But we
fat,
hear you.
Prosperous, these fat, prosperous Syrian Jews. I don't get it. They didn't seem very oppressed to me. Let me tell you something.
Well, that's an outrage.
The way the Syrian government works is, in the morning, you want to go to meet the chief rabbi, they bring you there with an interpreter, all right? And then the interpreter says, goodbye, Al-Assad. has soldiers all over the place in every neighborhood. Anybody that attempts to persecute anybody from any ethnic or religious group will get blown away or hung from a lamppost. Yep. His attitude is that all attacks on all ethnic and religious groups are dangerous to him as a minority Muslim of the Alawi sect.
Mr.
Well, I must say that.
Hold it,
I must
hold
tell
it,
you something.
Hold it, my ear, hold God. It, hold it. I need a commercial break. Yeah. Whereupon,
I want to get back to this.
I hope you will ask Lenny about the village of Homa in Syria. I'm Barry Farber. I'm trying to think of who the charismatic speakers are. Jesse Jackson. I wonder if we could name five. Into which my Air Kahana would not fit. I don't think there are five more charismatic speakers on the planet Earth. I knew he was a charismatic radio guest, but I'd never seen him before a live audience until last Sunday night, and it was a journalistic treat for me. He is not Jackie Mason, but he does have a routine. He uses 5,000 years of history. He uses Israeli reality. He uses the Holocaust. He uses Judaism in all of its dimensions. And he uses wit and humor. He has a routine. Ridiculing the idea of the Arab being happy in a state of Israel. You see, Rabbi Kahana has a rhetorical twist. He says that all those sentimental Jews, liberal Jews, who say the Arab and the Jew can live together, they are insulting the Arab. Explain that, Rabbi, and then get back to Syria.
I've got to get back to Syria quickly. Okay, I'll explain that quickly. Don't have contempt for the Arab. You cannot expect an Arab who lives in a Jewish state to be any happier about that than a Jew who would live in Jerry Falwell's Christian state. You can't expect an Arab to happily sing his national anthem, Atikva, with the words, the soul of a Jew yearning, because that doesn't speak to him. I mean, it just grips him, but it doesn't speak to him. You can't expect an Arab in Israel to rush out on Independence Day to happily celebrate his defeat. Don't have contempt. You cannot give the Arab an indoor toilet and say, you see, we have given you more indoor toilets than all the Arabs of Iraq. Now sit quietly. Let's not get carried away by this nonsense. In this case, Mr. Brenner's right that, of course, the Arab inside Israel hates the state which is not his. The only difference is that I have a very, very different answer. Mr. Brenner says give him the state in effect, because by making him equal and with his babies, he will be the first among equals. I want them out. I must get back to Syria. This incredible whitewashing of Assad, almost. That's, he has put down in the city of Hamas, when the Sunni Muslims rose up. It was an intifada of sorts, but it didn't last 11 months. It lasted about 11 minutes. He went in, killed 20,000 people. Anybody. That's it. 20,000 people. People died. This is the good man. You know, for the first time in this program, I felt pained and depressed. A Jew was sitting here and telling me, I went to Syria, and I spoke to the rabbi, and he said everything's fine. The rabbi is terrified. He's scared. He doesn't know who you are. Are you some kind of agent? My God, if you really cared about your fellow Jews the way you care about Catholics in Ireland and blacks in Mississippi, you would go to the Jewish community in Brooklyn, the Syrian Jewish community, and they would give you facts and figures and names and places if you really cared. And then you might write a book called My Poor Brethren, the Jewish People. In fact, I'm ashamed. I really am, for the first time, ashamed.
Yeah. Now, as a matter of fact, I did go over there as an agent of a Jewish group in Brooklyn. I went over there as an agent for the Naturi Carta, the Orthodox Jews in Williamsburg, who sent me to Syria to make an accurate report back to them as to the real state of Syrian Jews, because they didn't know what was true and what was false. Okay? Furthermore, with regards to talking to the rabbi who was terrified, how can I tell you he was not terrified?
Hold it. Hold it, honey. I'm Barry Farber. Barry Farber and my Air Kahana doesn't have his whole routine canned. I'm sure he doesn't give any two speeches alike, just like no two snowflakes and no two fingerprints are alike. But I missed one line. I wish he'd repeated as he was talking about the Arab living in Israel as a... How could we ever have thought that the Arab was going to be a grateful citizen of the land of Israel? He left out one line that he used Sunday night at the dinner for his followers in America at the Sheraton Center. And that was a line about the Arab going to the wall, going to the hotel and saying, "Oy, if only my Zeta could have lived to see heritage in the land of Israel." He makes his point. Lenny Brenner, you were telling us about how well off the Jews are in Syria.
Yeah, I'm being challenged now. I mean, is my integrity is involved?
Yes, indeed.
You have to understand, the Jewish quarter, there's no walls around it or anything like that. There's an old wall.
In Damascus.
Yeah, I mean, there's an old wall around the old city, which has the Jewish quarter, the Christian quarter, the Muslim quarter, and it's broken down and so on. But there's no wall between any of the Jewish quarter and the Christian quarter and the Muslim quarter or anything like that. And as a matter of fact, the main street of the old city is the world-famous street called Straight, which is mentioned in the New Testament, okay? Now, when you walk down the street called Straight, you run into store after store that is owned by Jews. Now, as I say, in the afternoons, I was always on my own, and I was strictly a tourist, and I'd be walking through there, and Jewish businessmen would come. They recognized me from when I had gone to the synagogue, and they would pull me off the street, bring me in for a cup of coffee, and have a chat with me. I didn't ask them. I couldn't tell a Jewish businessman from a Muslim businessman or a Christian businessman, and I wasn't going there to for any purpose other than just strolling down the avenue, as it were. They would pull me in, and we would then sit down and chat, and we would talk, etc. And many of their opinions differed from the rabbi, from each other, and from the Syrian government, okay? But in not a single case did I go so far as to say this. You see pictures of Assad everywhere in Damascus. There isn't an inch of wall space without a picture of Assad. You go into offices and there's the picture of Assad, etc. But nobody ever mentioned him in a conversation except the Jews. Because when he had come to power, and for about a year or two after he was in power, they were discriminated against. And then he lifted the immense majority of restrictions against them. So they were the ones who, he's their liberator. What they told me was they're worried about what happens when he dies, and the Sunni, these good fellows that you talk about in Hama, take over from him. I mean, they're not going to be as merciful towards the Jews and the Christians and the other minorities as the Sunni. But none of them had any complaints about Assad. I would say they were, in my recollection, the only ones in Syria who had a good word for the man were the Jews. Now, I mean, this may shock you. This may not be what you wanted to hear. But this is what I heard with my own two ears. And, you know, I didn't come here tonight. And I don't lie. I mean, you know, I'm not a friend of Assad. I mean, Assad is a dictator. I had an interview with the deputy prime minister, and I asked him. I pulled out the Amnesty International file and started asking about guys who had been in jail for 5 years, and they would just lie and tell me they were about to give one guy a trial. If they had been in jail for 5 years, they were about to give him a trial. You know, and I knew I'm not getting any honest answers from them, but I do feel that I got honest answers from the Syrians, the Syrian Jews, because many of them had been to New York, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you know, these were not...
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. He can go to New York if he leaves his family behind as, you know, hostage. I want to know why it doesn't bother you that the Syrians do not allow Jews to leave if they want to leave. I want to know why...
No, I'll tell you.
Wait. You're sitting and saying, there are no walls. You're right. You go to a South Africa. There are no wars for the blacks. You store after store is Indian owned. Store after store is Indian owned. And yet you're the first one to climb the barricades. Who cares about strength? But my God, they're oppressed peoples. But suddenly in Syria, why? I mean, after all, I can find you Zulus in South Africa who will tell you that we only hope that this government stays and a worse one does not come into power. What does that mean? What does that mean? I must say that I'm ashamed that you in your entire life never marched for Russian Jews, and you go to Syria and you come back and you tell us this garbage. But they're making money. Jews who want to leave cannot leave. That's a fact, and that doesn't bother you.
Okay, now, there are, as far as to the best of my knowledge, there are two restrictions today on Syrian Jews, or at least when I was there, which was in 1981, and I assume they're still there now. Number one, they're not allowed to be in the army, and number two, when they leave, and they do leave, okay, they must leave a relative behind. Now,
they take a trip.
Okay, let me explain.
Yeah.
So I asked the rabbi and others, do you feel you want to be in the Syrian army? And they said, look, publicly we insist we want to be in the Syrian army because we are Syrian citizens and we are entitled to that. Privately, what sane person wants to be in an army? Okay, that's number one. So they don't really see that as they're breaking my arm. They're keeping me out of the army. All right,
I'm not talking about that.
Okay, but that's the one restriction. That's the other, the leaving the relative. Every one of them said the same thing. Look, Assad, it's very clear. One guy, all right, I'll give you an example. One guy was a coppersmith, okay, and he had been a guest. He had given this beautiful copper tray that his father had designed. Assad had asked him to give it to the president of Romania, who was there on a state visit, and the guy became a friend of Assad's, and had been, you know, to the palace or whatever they call it many times, etc. Okay, they all, the Syrian Jews all said the same thing. Look, as far as the Syrian government is concerned, if they knew that we would all go to Brooklyn, where, like you say, there were all these Syrian Jews, or to Mexico City, where there were Syrian Jews, they'd be happy, they couldn't care less. Okay, but they're not idiots, and they figure some of us are going to go to Israel. They don't know which ones. Okay, and Israel is at war with Syria, so they're not about to let us go and fill in the ranks of the Israeli army. But they don't see it as a discrimination of that it's because he hates Jews or something like that. He doesn't want, he knows
it doesn't.
Of course
he doesn't hate Jews,
okay.
Of course
no,
not.
No, understand.
Most of them.
Most Syrian Jews are like Russian Jews. You know, you can yell, let my people go to Israel, until you're blue in the face, Rabbi, and they go right to Brighton Beach.
You contradict, okay?
They go right to Brighton Beach. Now, similarly,
if the Syrian Jews don't want to go to Israel, so then why do you say that Assad would let them out if they didn't go to Israel?
I asked them, where would you go if you could go? Where would you go? And you know what they told me? The consensus was, look, they'd go wherever they had a relative who would put them into business. All right?
Then,
if they were in Brooklyn, on Fifth Avenue,
then why doesn't Assad let them go to Brooklyn or Fifth Avenue?
Well, as a matter of fact, he let 30 Syrian Jewish women come to Brooklyn to marry Orthodox Jews from Brooklyn.
You know, if the state of Israel...
That happened. You admit that, yes?
If the state of Israel said, we won't let Arabs leave, period, they're going to be bound by this and this, but 30 of them can leave, you'd be writing a fourth book. What bothers me is tremendously there is something sick about a portion of the Jewish people which is incapable of feeling the same kind of anger and anguish about their own people that they feel about everybody else.
Hold it. I'm Barry Farber. Mayor Kahana and Lenny Brenner are exchanging views, collision of convictions on Israel and the Middle East. And by an odd coincidence, a woman in the control room turns out to be a Jew from Iran, Sarah Carmelli. Now, Iran is not the Syria that Lenny Brenner visited and Rabbi Meir Kahana is challenging. This is Iran, a different country. Will you tell me over the microphone, Ms. Carmelli, what you told me over the intercom from the control room?
I happen to be a Jew from Iran, despite my British accent. I would just like to say that although I've never been there, my parents are from there, my ancestors are from there, and there were so-called Morano Jews, and they were forced to convert to Islam, although they kept Judaism secret. What I just mentioned before was that Jews are barred from touching anything, especially anything in the marketplace, the fruits, vegetables, or whatever, because anything they touch automatically becomes impure for anyone else. That's just one part of the story.
That is Iran.
That's in Iran.
Okay.
Modern day, and also latter day, before when the Shah was there.
I heard it was pretty good for the Jews when the Shah was there. I didn't know that law obtained then. So this did not start with Khomeini then.
No.
Okay.
Before.
Thank you very much.
Thank
interesting
you.
Interesting
Thank
human
you.
Interest note. Lenny Brenner.
Yeah. Again, I want to get back to what I told the Syrians after, not the Jews, I'm talking now about the Syrian government, okay? I told them two things. When I had to fill out my visa to get into Syria, here in the United States at the Syrian consulate, there was this question, state your religion. And I deliberately said, what kind of nonsense is this? I mean, why are you doing this? I mean, do you really think that the Israeli government sends agents and they're going to be, you know, you're going to exclude them because they're going to mark the Jewish box? I mean, it's nonsense because obviously the Israeli government has spies in Syria and Jews and Arabs and Christians and Muslims and whatever, and they're not waiting for you to admit Jews. They have their spies already. What are you gaining from this except you look like a bunch of anti-Semites for doing it? And they got all flustered because this is obviously intelligent. Asking whether you are a Jew keeps out no Jewish spies, okay? That's number one. Number two, I told the Syrian government, look, draft Jews into the army. Because, again, if you really think there are no Israeli spies in your government, in your army because there are no Jews in your army, I mean, the last one in the world who would to think in terms of spying would be a Jew that you're drafting in because he'd be the one you're looking at, okay? Now, I'm not an admirer. I'm not a fan of the Syrian government, which is a despotism, all right?
I'm
grateful for small favors. I mean, my attitude is in politics you are guilty until proven innocent, all right? I mean, you run a government, you have to prove that you have seven bodies in the seven skeletons in your closet, okay? But the fact of the matter is that the Jews in Syria were prosperous. They weren't lying to me. You could see it. You could see it that they were prosperous, okay?
Mr. Brenner, are you...
Now, perhaps you
are
didn't
you
like
ready
what I
to
see, but I didn't lie about what I saw.
No,
I'm
you
not
don't
defending.
Know what... You don't know what you saw.
Now, what are you telling me? That they're tortured?
Well, first of all, some have been. There is no doubt about that. And again, I challenge you not to go to Syria under the auspices of a group which is, with all of its payas, with all of its earlocks and all of its beards, a vicious, self-hating group, but go to the Syrian Jewish community in Brooklyn, which has close blood ties with these people. In any case, make one brief statement here, please. Just state that the Jews of Syria, those who wish to leave, should have a right to leave, and the Syrian government is bad for not letting
Absolutely.
Them do so.
Absolutely.
Good man.
Absolutely.
Good man.
And I don't care.
Lenny,
I assume
there
some
is hope for you.
I don't care if some of them will go to Israel, because, number one, most of them, like I said, are going
to
go wherever their relatives are.
Carried away.
And secondly, I'll make it very clear. My difference with Zionism is ideological, okay? And what I tell Arabs is, the faster you get off ethnicity as the basis of your opposition to Zionism and the faster you get onto ideology, you win the argument.
Let me switch over to where Meir Kahana goes politically now. You have a new party, the Koyach Party. You are quoting only scripture because that cannot get you banned. What's going to happen with you? What's going to happen with Israel? What's going to happen to this Intifada, which now no longer needs a subtitle? Everybody knows that means the Arab uprising.
Right. Well, the Intifada will get worse. It will enter Israel. It has entered Israel. It will get worse and worse. The Arabs of Israel will become a far more active entity in it. I think that last week on television, people saw the Arabs of Taiba, which is not in the territories. That's in Israeli Arab village rioting. The same way, if you hadn't known that it was in Israel, you would have said, these are Arabs in Gaza. But they weren't. These are the happy, equal citizens. So it will get worse. The government of Israel is not capable. I mean, I know the parties that are in this thing. They're not capable of dealing with it. And the tragedy will grow. And that, tragically enough, and I say this with a heavy heart, will help me.
All right. When I say that I'm under the skirts of the New York Times, I am one of the observers who thinks you have been softening your stand. We get back together, I'll be...
God forbid.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'll tell you what I have in mind, and you speak your heart, as you always do. I'm Barry Farber. A little of what we hear about Rabbi Meir Kahana comes from Meir Kahana. It is almost always filtered through the lenses of those who oppose what he stands for. So I'm saying that before I even tell you what I remember about Meir Kahana's stand a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and within the past year. Back then, there seemed to be a clenched fist emphasis on throw them out, the Arabs. What I'm hearing now in the last four or five interviews I've done with Meir Kahana, most from Israel, the last two in the United States, has been, they may stay, provided they give up the right to vote and provided they live as guests in Israel with all human rights and all constitutional protections, but without the right to vote, because given the birth rates of the two groups, Jews and Arabs, the Arab birth rate is so much higher, they will one day vote Israel out of existence, and that's not what the Jewish state is for.
Two small points. First of all, I've said this always. I wrote a book.
I admitted that maybe exactly, but what I've been hearing is what they've been saying about you in the New York Times.
You're right. The reason why I don't emphasize that, or I didn't, or you know, don't emphasize that fact, because I appreciate the fact that, despite the fact that I am willing to make this offer, I don't believe that there are 100 Arabs under the age of 40 that would ever accept it. They will not accept an offer which will leave them not as second-class citizens, but as non-citizens. Nevertheless, the offer stands, and it always stood. So I haven't gotten moderate. Please don't ruin this great image which I've been working on for such a long time.
Lenny Brenner.
Yeah, I think in a way the rabbi has put it very simply. I think I'm fairly saying that you say that a Jewish state and democracy are incompatible.
Yeah. All right. Western democracy.
Western democracy. Eastern democracy.
No.
In other words, all right, Western democracy. Okay. In other words, American style, one person, one vote. Democracy is incompatible with a Zionist state. Now, you put a minus where I put a plus, or I put a minus where you put a plus. I am for democracy, and I agree. Zionism and democracy are simply incompatible. I'm for democracy, and you are for Zionism. And what I tell the American people is that the American people are for democracy, and I think the rabbi is quite fair. I mean, I was in Israel. I interviewed the deputy director of the Israeli Land Authority, which runs 92% of the land of Israel. I'm not even talking about the West Bank. And he said, can an Arab lease land, work on the land? And he said, no, I mean, it's for Jews.
Well, that's incompatible with modern American democracy. And I don't see why I, who believes in democracy, or the American people who believe in democracy, have to support a state and pay for that state.
If we had a little more time, I think the rabbi would explain it.
Oh, would I explain it?
The way he explained it Sunday night. But on stories like this, we never write the end, do we? We always write to be continued. Thank you, Lenny Brenner, author of 3 books on the Middle East and his latest one, The Lesser Evil, the Democratic Party, and Rabbi Meir Kahana, no longer of the Kach Party, but of the Koyach Party.